I understand we're starting with Fresh Start?
Yes.
And you have 10 minutes. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
May I reserve 5 minutes, please?
That's bold.
May it please the court, my name is Nick Rose, and I'm representing Fresh Start along with my co-counsel, John David Torin. 3 days before Big Bank was scheduled to sell the Astors' home at foreclosure sale, Fresh Start provided them with one final opportunity to save their home. Fresh Start presented, and the Astors signed, clearly marked documents that conveyed absolute title to Fresh Start. In return, the Astors received the right to remain in their home via lease agreement, and the document stated at the end of the lease agreement they could have the right to repurchase their home. The Astors now contend that the clear conveyance of title was actually intended by both parties to be a mortgage. In Gossett versus Farmers Insurance,
That's what you're arguing on appeal, that this should be treated as a mortgage?
No, that this should be a deed.
This should be a deed?
Yes.
So, and what is the result of accepting that argument?
The result would be that this case would be reversed and remanded.
Okay.
Thank you.
Does that position require us to disagree with the findings of fact entered by the trial court?
In as far as it requires you to disagree that both parties intended the deed to be a mortgage.
Well, given that we're to assume that there is substantial evidence to support that finding, how would we do that?
Well, because I am of the opinion that the substantial evidence, that the conclusion is a legal conclusion.
So you accept the facts as true, but you disagree with the legal conclusion the trial court reached.
Right.
So what people intend is a legal conclusion?
I guess not, no.
And that being so, aren't we stuck with this being something that the parties intended as a mortgage?
I guess if the legal conclusion is stated in,
Well, let me help you. There are three legal conclusions in the materials I reviewed.
Right.
The second one is the court concludes the deed conveying the property to Fresh Start was a mortgage, not a deed, but that's based on a finding of intent plus some other factual circumstances.
Right.
And are you aware of any cases where the parties intended a document absolute on its face as a deed, as a mortgage, and yet the court enforced it as a deed?
No, I'm not. Okay. In Gossett versus Farmers Insurance, the Washington Supreme Court reaffirmed a well-established principle of Washington contract law that when a deed is absolute on its face, and there is a strong presumption that it is exactly what it says it is. The question before this court is whether a rational trier of fact can conclude that there is clear and convincing evidence to establish that both parties intended the deed as a mortgage. We say no and request reversal. As I stand here today, not a single piece of evidence has been put forth by either party that Fresh Start intended the deed as a mortgage. The Astors have pointed to not a single fact that even implicitly suggests
the circumstance that Fresh Start did not assume the traditional risks of ownership. Are those facts from which one could infer intent?
Intent maybe of the Astors, but not of Fresh Start. Fresh Start was the one that presented the documents that were absolute on their face. Neither party discussed a mortgage. The documents didn't mention a mortgage. And neither party mentioned a mortgage for 6 months until the Astors defaulted on their, or fell behind on their lease.
Well, in the various cases where the court has found a deed absolute on its face to be a mortgage, in any of them, was there any discussion of the deed being a mortgage?
Of the deed being a mortgage?
Yeah,
Sorry, can you repeat that question?
There are Washington cases cited by the other side where the court has held that a deed absolute on its face was, in fact, a mortgage. In any of those cases, was there evidence of a discussion that the document was intended as a mortgage?
Not that I'm aware of. Thank you.
Thank you.
As a preliminary matter, I would like to only address the court for 5 minutes, at which point my partner will take over.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Eric Johnson, and I represent respondents John and Mary Astor, along with my co-counsel, Christine Jacobs. We're here tonight to request two things from the court. First, I ask that you uphold the trial court's judgment, quieting title and the home to the Astors. Second, Ms. Jacobs will address the cross appeal and ask that you overturn the trial court's ruling that Fresh Start did not violate the Washington Consumer Protection Act. In requesting that you uphold the trial court's ruling, quieting title and home to the Astors, I plan to cover three main points tonight. First, all of the trial court's findings of fact are supported by substantial evidence in the record and thus cannot be altered. Second, the presumption of a conveyance of title does not apply here, and thus the Astors are not held to the clear and convincing evidence standard to rebut it. Notwithstanding that presumption of conveyance does not apply in this case, the Astors are nonetheless able to rebut such a presumption and show that an equitable mortgage was formed.
The cases sometimes mention the presence or absence of a note affecting the analysis as to whether a deed absolute on its face is a mortgage. How does that play out here?
What type of note?
Promissory note.
Promissory.
To evidence a debt.
Yeah, I don't believe that we have a promissory note in this case. However, I do know that, of course, the first document that was signed in this case was a refinance agreement. And, of course, there is case law, Washington case law, which says that the character of the transaction is fixed at the inception of the transaction.
So does the absence of a promissory note, which ordinarily would go with a mortgage, impact this case? Does it help you?
I don't believe by any means that it's fatal. I don't know that it helps us. There are still certainly many avenues that by which the Astors could prove that this was indeed a mortgage rather than a conveyance of deed.
When do you contend that this transaction occurred? At the time the refinance agreement was signed or at the time the deed and other documents were signed?
The inception of the transaction, which Merriam-Webster defines as just the beginning of a transaction, the commencement of it, I think it's quite clear that it begins with the first document that's presented to the Astors by Fresh Start, which happened several weeks before they were presented with the...
Did the refinance agreement establish a binding contractual relationship of any sort between the parties?
I would argue that it did. I'm afraid at this point I don't have any authority to back that up. However, Fresh Start did present this agreement to the Astors, asked them to sign it. Both parties signed this refinance agreement, and it's our position that the character of the entire transaction was fixed at that point, according to Washington case law.
Why were additional documents signed if the refinance agreement is the agreement of the parties?
Of course there are other details to be worked out in a transaction of this matter, of this kind. It's hard to say why. However, we do stick to our point that, according to Washington case law, the character of the transaction is fixed at the inception.
If I understand correctly, the property was conveyed by deed, was it not?
There In the second set of documents that was presented to the Astors just a few days before the foreclosure sale, it is true that a conveyance of deed was in there, along with several other papers,
did the lease with the option to purchase. So did the other papers show there was a contrary intent to conveying the property by deed?
I believe that this refinance agreement is a collateral paper which shows contrary intent to conveyance of a deed.
Following up, was the initial agreement presented at the same time?
Well, are you saying that the refinance agreement wouldn't be the initial agreement?
No, it was the initial agreement.
Correct.
But then the deed came later, correct?
That's correct, several weeks later.
But you're pointing to the refinance agreement as collateral documentation that would show there was a different intent?
That's correct.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. That'll turn it over to my co-counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Christine Jacobs, and as my co-counsel mentioned, I am representing the respondents and will be discussing the cross-appeal. We respectfully request that you reverse the trial court's decision to dismiss the Astor's CPA claim with prejudice. There are five elements of a claim under the Consumer Protection Act that must be established. The appellants addressed three of these elements in their reply brief and contend that, we have contentions on three of these points. So I will be making three points today.
Are you going to address the threshold question of whether the trial court has authority to consider a CPA claim in an unlawful detainer?
No, I did not have that on my list. Could you repeat the question?
Whether the trial court has authority to even consider the CPA claim in the context of a unlawful detainer, because the court's authority in unlawful detainer is limited.
That is something that I will have to research and get back to you in a supplemental brief, if that is acceptable.
So if I understand it, you're going to then address why the court erred in dismissing the CPA claim?
That's correct.
And what would those reasons be?
So first of all, the trial court committed a reversible error in applying the incorrect law when they determined whether or not an unfair or deceptive act or practice occurred. Appellants agree that a de novo review is appropriate for questions of whether an act was deceptive or not. This is established by your court in State v. Kaiser. The trial court concluded that appellants did not engage in any deceptive practices. However, this was concluded based on their factual finding that the documents were all clearly marked.
So what was the unfair act or deceptive practice?
The unfair act or deceptive practice was twofold. First of all, that the initial agreement spoke of refinancing. And at this point, the initial agreement was several weeks prior to the foreclosure. And at this point, having this initial agreement caused the Astors to stop looking for other refinancing options. 3 days before the foreclosure was to happen, new documents were presented that were a deed as opposed to a refinance. So this was a deceptive practice.
You're saying it's sort of a bait and switch.
It was definitely a bait and switch, Your Honor. And the trial court concluded that this was not deceptive because the documents were clearly marked. However, case law shows that actual deception does not have to occur in order for something to be considered a deceptive act. It is enough that the act had the capacity to deceive. That is from State v. Ralph Williams Northwest Chrysler Plymouth, which was decided by the Washington State Supreme Court.
Well, could the original agreement be a deceptive act? You argue that the deed demonstrates that the parties signing on behalf of Fresh Start never intended to do what the first agreement promised?
So that the
Fresh Start brings an agreement to you and says, I'm going to refinance, and they're doing it with their fingers crossed behind their back, and we know that because of what they produce later.
Yes, I believe that is true, Your Honor.
And is there evidence that the unfair or deceptive act or practice that you're identifying had the capacity to deceive a substantial portion of the public?
Yes, Your Honor. We introduced into evidence in the initial case that there have been several families. It's not just the Astors that have been impacted by this. There have been several families that have been thus deceived and lost their homes to Fresh Start. So this is not an isolated incident where it was just a simple misunderstanding. This has occurred many times.
Your opposing counsel argues that the trial court shouldn't have considered that evidence.
They did not bring that up in appeal, Your Honor. So the second point I'd like to make is that the appellants have stated that one of the elements was not met because an injury has not actually occurred because they have not actually been deprived of their home yet. However, in Mason versus Mortgage, the Washington State Supreme Court found that the loss of title to the purchaser's real property was an obvious injury to injury to property within the purvey of the CPA.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is John David Torin, and I will also be representing the appellants Fresh Start in this matter. I'd like to begin my argument by addressing the Consumer Protection Act claim. The Astors have properly claimed that there are five elements that must be met to complete a Consumer Protection Act claim, the first of which the trial court found that they failed on, which was that Fresh Start did not engage in deceptive practices because the deed was or the documents were clearly marked.
Is that enough?
Well, if this court were to find that that Fresh Start had not engaged in a deceptive practice, then the collective, then the Consumer Protection Act claim fails on that on those grounds.
The fact that they're clearly marked enough. I asked opposing counsel if someone's up against a deadline to do something, I promise to refinance, and then just a day or two before I present something else, is that evidence that I never intend to do what I promised?
We contend that it is not. I think what happened here was 2 weeks before, or several weeks before the foreclosure of the home, discussions of a refinance agreement took place, but as was noted previously, no agreement, but that wasn't part of the final agreement that was reached.
Was an agreement signed then?
I think an agreement was signed then.
Fresh Start promised to do under that agreement.
Actually, it's my belief that there's nothing in the record that demonstrates that an agreement was signed then as the refinancing agreement. The refinancing was offered, but the Astors weren't prepared to commit to an agreement at that time and then approached Fresh Start 3 days before the foreclosure on the home to receive help to avoid foreclosure.
This has been characterized as a bait-and-switch tactic, is it?
I don't believe that it is. I think that nothing in the record demonstrates that that Fresh Start was anything but honest when the Astors approached them 3 days before the foreclosure was going to take place and asked for a deal to save their home. Fresh Start felt that the only way to provide such a deal was to purchase the home via deed and then with the option to repurchase later. That was the only way that the Astors could save their home, and so that was the only way the transaction could take place. But in that transaction, Fresh Start provided very clearly marked documents that described what exactly was happening so that the Astors could be aware that they were, in fact, selling their home with the option to repurchase it later. So I would characterize these acts as not deceptive. I think it's important to note, though, that under Washington case law, there are five elements to a CPA claim that the plaintiffs need to carry their burden on all of them in order for this court to determine that to find for the plaintiffs. And I think that the deceptive practices is but one of the elements on which they have failed to carry their burden.
So even if we disagree with you and conclude that it is a deceptive practice, your argument is one or more of the other required elements aren't present.
Yes, Your Honor. The five elements are, one, as we previously discussed, the deceptive practice, two, occurring in trade or commerce, which we do not dispute in this case, three, public interest impact, which we also have not disputed in this case, four, injury to plaintiff in his or her business or property, which I believe the plaintiffs have also not met in this case. The plaintiffs in their briefing point to the fact that the Astors have been deprived of their home as the injury under the Consumer Protection Act claim. And I think in this case, there's no evidence that the Astors were injured. They remain in their home to this day. That's why Fresh Start initiated eviction proceedings. But the injury of being deprived of their home just simply isn't present in this case.
What damages do they claim to have suffered as opposed to injury?
The damages they're looking for in their briefing, as far as I can tell, is from being deprived of their home. And I see no way to monetize such damages, considering they've never actually been deprived of their home to this point in time. So I would...
Well, but if we uphold the trial court's determination, then they've lost this remedy to reclaim any compensation for loss of ownership, don't they?
If you also were to find for us on the, yes, they would. They would lose the ability to claim for loss of ownership. So potentially there could be an injury in that case. But the fifth element of a Consumer Protection Act claim is that Fresh Start would have had to be the cause of the of the injury to the Astors. And I think that would not be the case, in that in this case, the Astors were only able to save their home through the late intervention of Fresh Start. So without the intervention of Fresh Start, the home would have been taken from them far sooner. So I see that my time is ending, so I'd like to conclude by urging that this court uphold the action of the trial court in dismissing the Consumer Protection Act claim. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.